You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, and the freestyle era continues. However, we've got a big, big, big news week this week. I don't know if we're going to get to it all. And more, big news week this week. Certainly biggest since Christmas holiday. Probably biggest since sometime in November, frankly.
I would say so. Yeah, things are just getting back into the swing of things. Everyone's, like, settled in.
A lot of explosive info this week, too. So we're just going to get right into it. We start to give out our email address again, so we're starting to get some mail. So here's some mail. You can always reach it at podcast@punknews.org, I think.
Which it's back? Goes to my,
you can email us at podcast@punknews.org, and that gets forwarded to my email account. So the first email I'll read is from our longtime listener, and I think he was on Punk's Points a few years ago, maybe a couple times. This is from Jason Beierstein. Jason says, "Do you think Lars from Rancid is okay? He's always selling all his stuff on Instagram." So my answer, Jason, is I do think Lars from Rancid, I mean, I don't know, but I do think he's okay. I think it is a little weird that he's like selling certain things on like on Instagram. If the listeners don't know, there's a Instagram called Lars Locker, which is supposed to be Lars Locker, where he like sells a lot of his personal stuff. Like Lars collects like, a lot of toys, kind of surprise, like Ninja Turtles and stuff, which kind of surprised me honestly. And so he's been selling like a lot of his Ninja Turtles and his WWF action figures, and also some vintage T-shirts, like, you know, I don't know, a UK sub shirt from like 1992 or something. But I think what Jason's referring to is he's also been selling like autographed Rancid records, which I agree is a little odd. It's like, well, like, do you need money that bad that you have to like he'll sell like an autographed Rancid record for like $80 or $100 when it's just like the normal record autograph? And it's like, well, do you need money that bad that you got to sell your autograph? And I don't know. I mean, Rancid makes the world of music is so funny or interesting, rather, because there's such scale. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like people think of, I don't know, Dark Thoughts is a pretty well-known band, but compared to Bouncing Souls, they're peanuts. And I'm not insulting Dark Thoughts. I'm just saying it's scale bands. But then. Bouncing Souls compared to Rancid is peanuts. You know, like Rancid is massive, massive, right? But then Rancid compared to Green Day, I don't know if it's peanuts, but it's a huge leap, right?
Yeah.
Then Green Day compared to U2 is a massive leap, right? Well, not a massive, actually, it's probably a big leap, but a big leap. And then U2 to Taylor Swift is a massive leap.
Oh my God.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it really is interesting that like we think of Rancid as being this giant, giant band, which they are, and they do make really good money. But compared to Taylor Swift, they're like a drop in the bucket, you know? It is interesting that like the smaller the world gets, the bigger the small fish seems, if you will. Anyway, the point being is Rancid makes good money, or I have to imagine they do. So my blind guess is that Lars has stuff he just wants to get rid of, so he's selling that, like his Ninja Turtle toys or whatever. So, Em, if you want Lars's Krang, you can buy that.
Oh, sick.
But also, you know, Lars does come from a working-class background, which he mentions every 2.5 seconds. And he comes from the very dangerous streets of Campbell, California, which has a Starbucks on Bascom Avenue. And down the street is a nice little burrito place. And next to that is the fantastic Streetlight Records and Rasputin Records. And, you know, but he does come from a working-class background, certainly. So I think he appreciates the value of money. So I guess he just figures, well, I have 5 copies of the new Rancid record on Starburst red vinyl. I don't want them. I might as well sign them and just get some money for them, and people that buy them want them. And I do think that people that buy them do want them, and it's kind of cool that he does that. But on the other hand, you know, charging for signatures when you're already doing pretty well, I don't know, Em. I don't know, you know?
Yeah, it's a tricky situation for sure, because you don't know what's going on with him and everything. It's probably along the lines of what you're saying. It's probably just he has some extra shit and he's just like, I can make some money off of it. It doesn't need to just kind of hang out here.
And it's easy for me to say, but Lars and Tim is, I think they take advantage of fans a little bit. Like, remember when Tim was selling like, PDFs, when Tim was selling
NFTs
of like $2,000. It's like, You
Oh, that
know
was
those aren't.
ridiculous.
You know those aren't. I mean, they're not worth anything now. You know,
Oh,
but even
God,
then,
no.
everyone knew they're not going to be worth anything. It's like, you know that fans are spending $5,000 just because they want a tiny fraction of Tim Armstrong. You know, or Tim
Yeah.
sells his prints for like $1,000 for $1,000 for a print, and it's just some skull that he painted. You know, it's like it's not some deep artistic statement. His technique is decent, I guess, but $1,000 for a print. And so he's not really selling the art. He's selling a speckle of Tim Armstrong, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I think that's kind of not cool to tell you. You know what I mean? Like they could sell others. Like I mean, they've got a lot of records they could repress. Or and they've got, you know, they could even sell. Rancid fans love to buy Rancid shirts. So they could press new Rancid shirts, you know.
Bring
But it's
back
a
the
it,
mini bat.
but it, the mini bat, but it's easy. I would actually argue the mini bat is more along the lines of what I'm saying. It's kind of taking advantage of fans.
Yeah, I
It's
agree.
like it's easier to paint a skull on a picture on a canvas for 2 hours than it is to, you know, repress records or whatever. And the difference in money coming in between those two projects probably isn't that big, you know. So I do think Rancid. I mean, you know, I mean, Rancid tickets are 40 to 50 bucks, which is reasonable, I think. Yeah, I mean, 2024, I think it's reasonable for a punk band of their size. So I don't, and they sell a million t-shirts, and they sell a lot of records. So I don't know if it's cool that they're, I mean, and who knows? I mean, maybe Lars does need money. I don't think he, I mean, I remember about 10 years ago, someone posted the sale of his house online in one of his houses in San Francisco, and Tim was down to LA. And, you know, it was a nice house. So I don't think they need money. And so I do think it's a little questionable. I mean, if Lars wants to sell his toys that are worth $75 for $75, fine. But you know, I think things get a little iffy when there's quote value added when it's just because it's Lars stuff or just because it has Lars
Yeah.
signature or Tim or just skull that Tim painted. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it does seem a little too much.
But on the other hand, I mean, you could look at it this way. I always take the very strong stance that Ian MacKaye should make Minor Threat t-shirts and Fugazi t-shirts because they're getting bootleg every day. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Minor Threat t-shirts bootleg, right? Every day.
Right.
And they're usually made in sweatshops or the shirts from sweatshops, you know what I mean? Or and quote, best case scenario, the money's just gone to some 55-year-old dude in a garage that just wants to get free money off other bands that he had nothing to do with, you know? My
Yeah.
argument is that the market is there. Even if you don't want the market, it's going to exist. So you might as well take control of it and handle it responsibly and get the money to the Minor Threat guys. Or if you don't want money from t-shirts, then give it to some cause or something, you
Yeah,
know?
donate it.
But I mean, and that's sort of easy for me to say because then, well, John, you don't have to manage the t-shirt, but you could pawn that off on somebody you trust relatively easy. Lots of bands do. And
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think Ian MacKaye and Minor Threat should make t-shirts. So you could argue, well, if the market's there with Lars, fans want stuff signed by Lars. So Lars might as well sign stuff and get money for it. I guess he could do it for free. I guess that argument doesn't totally hold up, does it? He could just do it for free, couldn't he?
He could just do it for free. Just be like, hey, you want a Rancid record? All right, cool. Like, I don't know, $25. Oh, yeah, I signed it. Have fun.
You know, there's one guy, M, that people continually make fun of and diss. But until about 3 years ago, you could mail him any record and he would sign it and mail it back to you for free. Do you know who that was?
Aw, that's nice. No.
Danzig.
That's so nice. Why did he stop?
I think because he was getting too many, and that's when the
Oh, fair
bootleg
enough.
market really exploded. He famously won't sign bootlegs, and bootlegs were getting better and better. And I don't blame him for not signing bootlegs. I think that's the right move, frankly. But I also think he should print records that are being bootlegged. But so I think he got tired of comparing them. And but so until about 3 4 years ago, you could mail him any official Misfits Sam Hain or Danzig record, and he would sign it and mail back as long as you paid postage, and he would mail it
Right.
back to you. So you know.
That's pretty nice.
Who do you think makes more money, Rancid or Danzig?
Probably Rancid. Do you
Well,
think?
I think you might be right, but now with Misfits, you know, those
Oh,
Misfits
that's
checks are
true.
pretty fat, you know. Anyways, so
Yeah.
that's from Jason. We got a long letter from Frank L. I'm just going to read one sentence because this letter is really long. Here's what it boils down to. Frank L.
What's
really
up?
likes so he really likes social distortion. So here's what he wants to know. Emma, I'll let you answer this. Will
Oh,
we
okay.
ever get a new social distortion album? That's Frank's question.
I would say probably yes, because they're touring and haven't they been working on an album for like 7 years or something?
Well, that's the joke. They've been saying new record next year, like 10 years in a row. Let me look. Like, I'm not really a Social Distortion fan, but they've been
Yeah.
promising new material for like decades. Let me look here.
I think it's going to come out. I think it's going to come out at some point, and I think it's going to be a surprise when it does.
Literally, they've been promising a new record for 13 years. Like
Oh
next year.
shit. Maybe this will be the lucky year for
And
Social Distortion fans.
do you think it'll be any good?
I do not like Social Distortion. It's not my cup of tea, but if it's your cup of tea, good for you. You know, enjoy, like what you like.
Well,
Have
there
the
you go.
little skeleton with the little
Martini.
blood, yeah. Blood martini.
Or is it wine? Is it wine or martini? You know, I never really thought about it. Let me look here. And I've told you before, do you know who designed the social distortion skeleton?
Yes, you told me. That was quite a story.
Jackie Osborne. She put on a
Yeah.
Christmas card and social distortion just took it.
Pay
Here we
her.
go. You actually, well, yeah, is it a blood martini or is it a wine glass? Or maybe it's up to the viewer. I don't know, ma'am. You tell me.
I think because it's a skeleton, it's blood.
So you
Wait, are
think
you
it's,
going?
I'm going martini. I to me,
All
just,
right.
I feel like it should be, I mean, it might be like blood. Oh, I see. He's drink. Well, no, actually, it's not a wine glass. It is a martini glass. So he's drinking blood out of a martini glass, not wine out of a martini glass. That makes sense.
It
So
could
there
be
you have
wine
it.
out of a martini glass. You never know.
But doesn't blood out of a martini glass make more sense though for a skeleton?
And it sounds cooler.
Okay. This is from Acres 47. Thanks for posting the best of 2023 lists. Have you considered doing mid-year lists or quarterly lists to let people know about the fire punk stuff coming out in the middle of the year from Acres
Oh,
47?
that's a good idea.
No, it's not, Em.
Why?
Not so much now, but 3 or 4 like. Starting 10 years ago, best of year lists were really big, or maybe even like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And about 10 years ago, I guess they hit their height. And then afterwards, like AV Club and even Pitchfork, which we'll talk about later tonight,
Yeah.
and Vice, and I'm missing Consequence. They would do like mid-year best of, and some of them would even do quarterly best ofs. I'm against that because I
Okay.
feel it makes the end of year wrap up less special. I think people, I mean, listicles were huge like 3 or 4 years ago. I think people are kind of listicled out, and that includes end of year lists. I love end of year lists. I feel like it's people don't feel like it's a big a deal anymore. I guess there's some correlation with social media. So that being said, I think the end of year list should be among the most special article release of the year. So I am very much against ranking mid-year and quarterly lists. However, I am pro, and we need to do more of them in 2024. Cool new band to check out
Hell
lists.
yeah.
Or, stuff like that, those kinds of articles. And actually, Ricky Frankel had an interesting
Yes.
idea for not a cool new band article, but he's driving a lot of, well, related to Green Day that we're going to post, I think, next week. So Ricky had a good idea and he's driving that. And so I think we should do, and I definitely think we should do more of those kinds of articles.
I agree. Those are really fun.
So you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Let's see here. Speaking of lists, we posted our best of 2023 lists.
Yes.
Em, how do you feel
Hell
about your
yeah.
list? And how do you feel about the fact that your list, my list, and Sam's list are totally different? Totally.
Yeah, because every year I go through thinking, like, do I have overlap with anybody? So, like, before I read, I just kind of, do the what's ranked and stuff. And I think, well, I don't think Sam and I had any that were the same. And I know you and I had, I think, three things.
No, only one, Screaming Females.
Oh, I was counting EPs.
Okay, let me. I'm looking at your EPs
Yeah,
now.
because I had Fishbone 2, Scowl, Fucked Up, and Fucked Up. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And then I didn't have any overlap with Sam. Because I don't think she put scowl on hers.
I was surprised by that, frankly.
I thought she would. I thought it'd be on her list. But I mean, like, she does have some stuff that I have not checked out that I want to. And she does have some stuff that sounds cool. When we did one of the episodes where we just kind of played music and talked about it, Sam played a slow dive song and it was really good, and I've been meaning to check out that album. So it's just like, ah, yes.
And what do you think's going on with Effed Up? Did you read his most recent blog post where he talked about how much he hates social media and he's going to start posting back on his the Looking for Gold blog spot?
I did not see that. Where was it?
On the Looking for Gold blog spot, which was the old Effed Up website before like Instagram kind of took over everything.
Yeah.
What do you think was happening with Effed Up? You know what I mean? Like, are we near the end? What do you think's going on?
I don't think we're near the end. I think they still have a lot of juice and a lot of gas in the tank. I think they're at a point where I feel a lot of bands are right now where it's, we're not really being treated as bands, we're being treated as products. And a big thing of that is social media. And it's like, how much time out of your day is being used for social media and keeping up all of these accounts and different things. So I think it's more to do with like a social media burnout than it is like any creative kind of halting.
I still think
What's
it's
your
because
take?
I still think it's they're totally dysfunctional, and that's and I think Mike Hylechuk and some of the other members, but I think Mike Hylechuk is really weird, and I think they don't I think they're at a point where they don't even talk to each other outside of the band, not because they
Oh.
hate each other, but just because like the only thing they have in connection now, like I mean. When you think about it, how many of your high school friends do you really talk to? I actually talk to about five, but that's because I've got a close pack of high school friends. But that being said, it's
Right.
like they're all in very different places in their lives, probably, you know? One of them lives in England, which I still like I remember like Hallie Bullet would say, no. I still think anytime a band member moves way far away, it's kind of an F you to the band. You know what I mean? Like it always slows down a band. It makes it harder for them to meet up. I just think that's someone saying the band's not my priority anymore or right now, which isn't the worst thing in the world, but I do think anytime a band is all over the world or even country, then it's when the band kind of goes from being a full-time band to a project, if you will. I think that's where Effed Up is. That being said,
Yeah.
both the Cops EP and the Oberon EP were absolutely phenomenal. So, first of all, I really, really hope we get to the end of the Zodiac. We're actually like pretty close at this point, aren't we? For a while, it would seem like
Yes.
they weren't going to make it, but I mean, let's see here. I'm going to see how close we are to this. We're actually BSing a lot on this episode, but oh well.
Ah, it's good.
I think you're going to make it. Let's see. There's
I
one,
think
two,
so.
three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. So we're only three Zodiacs away from the full thing. So I think you're going to do it, Em. I think you're going to do it.
I think they're gonna do it too. I hope they do.
After they do it, then I don't care what happens. I mean, like I love the band, and I hope they make stuff forever. But if they break up or kind of fade away after the end of the Zodiac, that's okay. But I
Yeah.
will say, I think Effed Up is frustrated, and actually this ties into what we're going to talk about in a little while. I think they're frustrated in that their albums don't move the general population or culture like they used to. Like Chemistry of Common Life was a massive record when it came out. David Come to
Yeah.
Life was a ma even bigger, which honestly I thought David Comes to Life was a little boring, although live it's way better. But then they took a long time for Glass Boys to come out, and that was kind of I thought that was kind of a stale record. Then they put out Dose Your Dreams, which the media ate up and loved. I loved Dose Your
Yeah.
Dreams. I thought it was fantastic. But it didn't really sell that many records. And so I think that's kind of where maybe they're frustrated in that they're, I don't know. I think they're frustrated. Maybe they don't know where to go next because they've done so many things, you know? My suggestion would be do a Back to Basics hardcore record, which I believe Damien wanted to do for a little while and Mike
Yeah.
didn't. Maybe that's a little cliche, but sometimes it still kicks ass. I don't think we're going to see that. But on the other hand, They put out Year of the Horse, which was an astoundingly great record, which was basically an album. And that got a ton of press, but I don't know if that sold a whole lot of copies or not, you know?
It was really good. Well, like,
Yeah.
and that's kind of the thing. Like, do you think that it's come down to units sold? Like, do you think they're not having like fun with it anymore and they're just trying to make money?
No, I think of anything the opposite. I don't
Yeah.
think Effed Up is saying we need to make more cash. I think as Oberon, as Year of the Horse, and even One Day Show, they're interested in doing, they're trying to do interesting things that they haven't done before. I thought One Day was okay, not great. I liked it, I didn't love it, you know.
For sure.
And it's and I know they put a whole lot of like I know for a fact they put a ton of work in the Year of the Horse. I think they put a lot of work into One Day, even though the idea was, what can you do in a day? Which honestly, to me, kind of seems like a not really that significant of a challenge. I think I would have preferred another angle, you know. But that being said, is I think maybe they have some creative burnout, and they're like, well, what do we do now? You know, or I mean, think about this. They've been a band now way longer than you might think. They've been a band almost 25 years, which is crazy. If
That
they were the
is.
Rolling Stones, they'd be releasing Undercover, which is insane if you think about it. You know what I mean? So maybe they've got some creative burnout. But also, it is tough when you put so much work into an album and the press is like, this is going to be great, this is going to be great, and you don't have that many units. And you go on tour and the shows aren't sold out. I saw Effed Up not that long ago, and it was cool, but it really didn't sell out, and it didn't sell out, and Effed Up used to always sell out, you know. But on the other hand, live, I don't know who calls the set list or not, but live they do a lot of the indie rock stuff instead of the punk stuff or the far out stuff. Interestingly, I saw the Effed Up tour where they did a bunch of Zodiacs in a row. I was absolutely blown away. I thought they did Year of the Horse, Year of the, no, I'm sorry, Year of the, I'm sorry, they did Year of the Dog, Year of the Dragon, and maybe Year of the Ox, like all together.
Oh,
I thought it was
nice.
amazingly good. And they did it in combination with some other band. I can't remember their name. Like at the same time on stage. It was amazing. But I remember other Effed Up fans like really not being that impressed by that. I'm like, this was like amazing. You know, I don't know why you're not like blown away. So.
Well, I think in a way they have like creative burnout, but it's also like they have so many things that they could do that would be so like fun and interesting. Like the two covers they did with the Hallucination,
Those were
John
cool.
Wayne was, yeah, they were awesome. So like if they want to collaborate and kind of do more because they toured Canada together, both those bands, and I'm pretty sure every show sold out because I know I was looking for Toronto tickets and I couldn't find them. So like if they did something like that, I think that would probably be the next step. Because that way it's more, they're trying different things, they're experimenting different things, and they're making music with like their friends. So I think that's probably what we're gonna see. And I think it's just social media is, you know, kind of brain rot and need to get away from it, recharge.
Well, there you have it. I don't know how we got off on an effed up tangent, but let's talk
You're
about the
endless.
90s. The 90s are back. And speaking of
90s.
back, Sublime is back again. And so quote, Sublime has reunited with Budd Gow and Eric Wilson. Eric Wilson was in Sublime with Rome, of course, but that was with Rome and Joe Tomino, not original Sublime member Budd Gow. So now Sublime is Budd Gow and Eric Wilson, and of course, who on vocals? Jacob
Jacob
Noel, son
Noel.
of Bradley Nowell. So the first reunited show will be at Coachella. There's a few interesting things to unpack here. I think
All
it was
right.
like 2 weeks ago, Sublime with Rome said, well, we're wrapping up Sublime with Rome. Be sure to check us in 2024 because we're doing a bunch of stuff in 2024 and we're ending at the end of 24, 2024. And then all of a sudden they're like, Sublime's back. So are we going to have Sublime and then Sublime with Rome as two separate things for a year? Or Was Rome taken by surprise? I have to imagine that he wasn't, because everyone kind of saw this coming. That's one thing. And the other thing that's kind of weird is the Sublime website didn't say Sublime is back. They just said we're playing Coachella, whereas Coachella issued a press release explaining who's in Sublime 2024. M, are you excited for this? What do you think is going on with Sublime? Sublime with Rome? Or is Sublime a stupid frat rock band that people should hate and ignore?
I'm not like I don't know, I guess, a lot of Sublime songs. I just know a couple. So I'm not like a hardcore Sublime fan by any stretch of the imagination. But
They
it's
only have
all
three albums, Em. There's only three albums.
yeah, I know about three songs. Maybe, I don't know. I know a couple songs. But I think like this is pretty cool to see the band with like Jacob Noel singing, because you know he's carrying on like his father's legacy, and he's probably talked to these people. They've been in his life for you know quite a while, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they play together and what their dynamic is. But I really hope that we reach like dueling Sublimes, where it's we have Sublime and then we have Sublime with Rome, and they're kind of playing on two sides of the same stage, or they keep being booked at the same festivals, and it's like you know like a friendly rivalry or just something like that, because I think that'd be so funny.
I'm imagining like Sublime and Sublime's Rome playing at the same festival at the same time.
Yeah.
So Eric Wilson has to like plug in his bass and run it through both bands, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so funny. That's what I hope happens. What do you think of the news?
I mean, I'm not surprised. We all saw this coming.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I thought Sublime with Rome was kind of cheesy and not cool. I love Sublime. Everyone should check out Sublime. Sublime is one of the most clever, interesting, fun, and nice sounding bands from the 90s. They're so much more clever than people might think they are, with them stitching together the history of music from reggae and soul and punk and classic rock and hip hop onto this web that like winks back to all these different genres without being exploitative. Or maybe it's a little exploitative, but I don't care because it's so good. It's freaking awesome. Sublime is one of the greatest bands of all time. Sublime is great. I think if there's going to be Sublime Live, there's no better person than Jacob to sing the vocals, because he sounds almost exactly like Brad and he looks almost
Yeah.
exactly like Brad. I would go see, I wouldn't go see Sublime with Rome unless I was at a festival and I was already there, then I would go. But I actually pr probably would pay to go see Sublime with Jacob. I'm very interested on the legal side to see how this came about, because if you recall, M, originally Sublime with Rome was Sublime, and the Noel
Right.
estate sued the other two members or sent a nasty letter saying you can't do this without our permission. And so, of course, Jacob Noel and his mother own a portion of the Sublime estate, maybe the entire thing, you know. And so it's interesting to see how that worked out. Like, did Jacob call up Sublime and say, I'm taking my rightful place, and you either can get with it or I'll see you into oblivion? Or was it truly like an organic thing where at that festival where people just thought, hey, it'd be cool if Jacob sang with Sublime, because Jacob was singing Sublime songs with Long Beach Dub All Stars, which was
Oh, that's right.
kind of interesting, because it's Long Beach Dub All Stars is the band that formed out of the breakup of Sublime, but there's no original Sublime members left in there. But they do Sublime songs with the son of the guy from Sublime. Meanwhile, there's a band called Sublime that only has one of the Sublime guys in it, you know. So I'd be interested to see how that all played out. I'd be interested to see what Rome's thoughts are, but I think you gotta say to Rome, Rome, you've been in the band for like 10 years now, like longer than Brad. I think you got a square deal out of everything, you know.
Yeah.
So I would go. I am interested to see how it all came about and how it worked on the legal side of things. We'll never know, but I'm interested. Meanwhile, Jacob is also releasing his own solo band. It's called Jacob's Castle, and he released a song called Catch Me. And what do you think of Catch Me?
I had no idea what to expect for this, just because all of the singles he's been releasing are very like eclectic. This is like super. You know, like It's chill, it's poppy, it's a little bit mellow, and it's very catchy. I didn't mind it. It wasn't like my favorite thing, but it wasn't bad overall. He can really sing and has a good voice. So I didn't mind the song. The video, he's just like hanging out on a beach and he's like buried up to his neck in sand at one point, and he's like smoking and just kind of getting sunburnt. So I didn't mind the song. I wasn't a big fan of the video.
Well, you definitely could say the video is reminiscent of another band, very similar. I was ready to be all gung-ho Jacob after that Time Traveler song. I'm like, yeah, Jacob's great. They put out another song. I'm like, yeah, it's not that good, but Time Traveler, and then he puts out this song, which is not bad. It's just kind of a generic pop song. I think I'm getting off the Jacob Castle train, Em. I was ready to go all on, but Time Traveler, great song. The other two, just generic pop. I'm emotional. Like, that's what those songs are. You know what I mean? So,
Are you going to give the album a chance? Because Time Traveler is on it.
I am going to give it a ch I'll give it an honest chance, but I think it's just going to be kind of a generic 2020s pop album, which weirdly sounds a lot like generic 2008 pop albums. You know what I mean? The pop hasn't really progressed a whole lot in the past 15 years at all. It really hasn't.
A lot of nostalgia.
Yeah. So, anyways, I mean, I'm giving the guy a chance, but I gotta say, I wasn't blown away. But speaking of the 90s, that blew me away. M, No Doubt is back together. It's going to be their first show in something like 15, no, not 15 years, 8 years,
Nine, was
nine
it?
years. You're right, 9 years. And they're playing at Coachella. And also playing Coachella, Doja Cat, Tyler, the Creator, Lana Del Rey, a bunch of other pop
Upchuck.
bands, Upchuck, I guess, The Addicts, Deftones, Jay Blavin, Gene Iko, Corbon. So a lot of very Pitchfork-ish type, Sublime, Ice Spice, a lot of very Pitchfork-ish type bands, and No Doubt, which really isn't like hardly any of the other bands here aside from Sublime. Grimes is playing. I guess she's going to talk about Elon Musk or whatever. We'll see.
Oof.
Anyways, no Doubt is back together. And this was quite shocking because in an interview about 4 or 5 years ago, Gwen talked about how she didn't really want to do the Push and Shove album and she felt kind of pressured into it by the other members and the label.
Right.
Then last year in an interview, they say, Gwen, is there going to be a Sublime reunion? A No Doubt reunion? And she said, you never know. But like not, and that usually means that there's no plans. But then I think Adrian Young in the interview last year said almost definitely not. And then something happened in the past 6 months where the answer is definitely yes. And I think everyone probably agrees that the thing that most likely happened that said definitely yes was a giant big fat check. I am surprised that this did happen though, because No Doubt if they had wanted to, M could have gotten together and done their own giant reunion tour and make tons and tons and tons of cash. Which makes me wonder how much is Coachella paying them, and will there be more No Doubt, and do they all hate each other? What was very interesting, and actually there was an article in Rolling Stone magazine today or yesterday, which I almost felt like I wrote it because it had all the talking points that I thought about is when Gwen would do solo stuff, she would not do any No Doubt songs. However, at her last tour, when after No Doubt guys, the Dream Car. Gwen was doing a whole bunch of No Doubt stuff solo live, which I would have gotten to see if friggin' Delta Air, no, United Air, no, yeah, United Airlines, was it Delta? No, American Airlines didn't strand me in Chicago for 3 days. I could have gotten to see it, which I really did. I mean, I'm shocked. I guess I'm not that shocked because I mean, if you would ask me, John, is it going to be a No Doubt reunion sometime? My answer would have been yes. I just didn't see it coming this year. I've seen No Doubt twice before the long hiatus back in 2008. I saw them twice in 3 months on their normal tour and then for the Bridge School benefit, and they were astoundingly good, astoundingly good. But I'm shocked. I mean, I'm sure these shows will be decent, but I love you. And if you recall the time we had Mike Park on, and he's like, I can tell when the band members hate each other. I'd love to see the show with Mike Park to see who hates who in Sublime. or maybe they don't hate each other. And what's your take? Do the band members of Sublime hate each other? What prompted this? Would you go see this? Will it be great, or will it just be kind of empty and hollow? And more importantly, will this be an extended reunion, or will this be kind of one of these reunions that isn't that uncommon, where they play for like 9 months and then just go away again forever, you know?
Well, like, I want to know what happened. Like, why did they go on hiatus? Like, was there a massive falling out? You know, like, have they somehow patched things over in the past little bit? Like, how does it just go? How does it go from, yeah, nope, never, to, yeah, for sure, 100%. Look at this. We're on the bill. And also, like, Gwen Stefani playing No Doubt songs kind of by herself when she hasn't been doing that for years is also kind of like suspect. So maybe they did have a really bad falling out initially, and now, you know, they're all getting older and they're like, well, we had some great times together and we can let the past be the past and we can work through whatever our differences are and come together and do something fun. Because again, you don't start a band with, well, okay, you don't usually start a band with people you hate. So
unless you're the Ramones.
Yeah, I was going to say. There are certain cases. But for the most part, everyone kind of tolerates each other, at least, you know, has a decent rapport kind of thing. So I think it would be interesting to see how they act with each other on stage. I think that's going to tell a lot about if they are going to do an extended tour or if they're like, nope, one and done, 100%, just for the check, goodbye, kind of thing. So they're a band that I find very hard to get a read on if they like each other or not. Do you think they like each other?
No, I don't.
No.
I think there's probably a lot of resentment between. So, I mean, a lot can happen in a couple of years. It is sort of telling that the other three members started a new band without Gwen, you know?
Yeah.
And so you say, well, it must be Gwen versus the other three. But that maybe that's not the case. Who knows? However, it could be a Stevie Nicks situation or a, what's the other famous one? Oh, a Roger Daltrey, Pete Townshend thing is where, you know, Gwen went solo. And I think that was during a break in the band. And I think actually at that time, it wasn't her idea to take a break. I think it was Tony Kanaal's idea to take a break. So she did her solo thing and it took off like a rocket, you see. So strictly from a business standpoint, if she's making even one third of what the No Doubt the band makes, then she shouldn't ever get back together with No Doubt because she's making more money. But the fact of the matter is Gwen solo probably makes as much as No Doubt, you see. So why would you ever get back together with No Doubt when you make as much money by yourself? Whereas if you play with the other guys, you'd have to split it four ways, you see. And so, and I don't know this is the case with No Doubt, but it could be a situation, you know, Pete Townshend, Roger Daltrey, a very interesting, so not that I care about the Who at all, because I really don't, but at some point in the Who's career, you know, Pete Townshend writes all the lyrics and the music for the Who, or almost all of it. Roger Daltrey, but Pete can't, you know, Pete's not as good singer as Roger, and Roger is a big part of the band on record and live. So Roger Daltrey said, well, I'm not going to continue doing The Who unless I get a portion of the publishing, which means he's getting money from songs that he didn't write simply because he has the leverage, you see. And so, and Stevie Nicks did a similar thing with Fleetwood Mac. When, you know, when Fleetwood Mac went on hiatus and Stevie Nicks did her first two solo records and they were massive records, she went back and said, well, you know, I'm Stevie Nicks now. I don't need you. You kind of need me. So I'm calling the shots now, or I'm calling a lot of the shots, or at least more shots than I used to call. So it could be with Gwen that because Tony Kanaal said, well, let's take a pause. And Gwen said, okay. And then she became huge, you know. And then Dream Car was a total failure. That only increases Gwen's stock, you know. So, and this is pure speculation, which we could do on the show. It could be that Gwen said, all right, well, if you guys want to do No Doubt again, I want X, I want Y, and I want Z. And if you don't agree to my terms, then I'll just be Gwen Solo and you can go do Dream Car and make $17 per show, you know? And maybe that's what happened. And it is things like that that can cause resentment. Famously, even though they won't admit to it, both Roger Daltrey and Pete Townshend really don't like each other at all. And certainly part of that is probably because Roger Daltrey, you know, kind of uses leverage on Pete Townshend. The other anger in the Who might be that, you know, Pete Townshend has been involved in some really sketchy stuff, which jeopardizes Roger Daltrey's career a big time. So that can make a guy say, well, all right, then I'm using my leverage. You know, if you're going to put me at risk. And so maybe that's the thing, you know. It kind of goes back to also like the Mick Jagger, Keith Richards thing when the Rolling Stones were really not getting along. Mick said, I'm going to go solo. You know, and famously, She's the Boss, the solo album by Mick flopped, which even though I actually think it's a really good album and better than some Rolling Stones album. So that kind of gave Keith leverage the album, Keith more leverage to get the Rolling Stones back together. Here, it's the other way around. Gwen's solo stuff has been huge. She doesn't need No Doubt by any means. They need her. And so maybe that's what caused resentment. And then Coachella comes along and says, we'll give you, I can't even fathom what they, I mean, they haven't performed in 10. I mean, look at it this way. You could say they'll give them $1 million each, but it's got to be way more than that, Em, because they can make $1 million each without Coachella. You know what I mean? So it could have been that Coachella came along and say, we'll give you 10 million. And because that's so much money, even though Gwen, I'll just make up a number. Let's say Gwen gets 60%, that's still 1.3 million for the other guys for one night, you know? So it's kind of worth it, you know? So
Oh,
maybe that's what got
definitely.
them back together, is that they throw so much money at them, even though Gwen has leverage that she didn't used to have, and maybe rightfully so. Maybe that's what got it back, get them back together. Or I could be totally wrong. Maybe they used to hate each other, and maybe they're friends again, and they just want to be pals again and make music. I don't know. I really don't know, you know?
We should have one of them on the podcast, grill them.
We should. I think we did have some that we had Tony Kanaan, not Tony Kanaan. We had the tuba player or the trombone player. What's his name? We had him on once. What's that guy's name? He played with Tegan and Sarah. Gabriel McNair. We had him on. Nice guy. So yeah. So I, you know, I'd like to know what's going on behind the scenes. But Em, you didn't answer the question. Is it going to be awesome or is it going to suck?
I think it's going to be good. I think they're going to pull it off. I think maybe Gwen doing the song or doing the No Doubt songs solo was part of her like practicing and kind of getting back into it. I think it's probably like a My Chemical Romance situation where they've been practicing or back together for longer than they let on. You know, kind of prepping for it, which if that's the case, then that also kind of leads to, well, maybe Coachella is a jumping off point and they will be doing a tour, maybe like releasing new music, but definitely touring more. It makes you think, but I think they're going to be good. I have seen, vi I've never seen them live, but I've seen like videos and different things online and I've never seen a bad one. I've never seen anyone like saying, oh, I went to the show and I had a bad time because the band sucked. So I think they're going to pull out all the stops, especially on like a pretty big festival stage or very big festival stage. And maybe they're just testing the waters to be like, do we still have a market? Will people come see us? Is it going to be awesome or is it going to suck?
It's going to be awesome. No doubt it's great. I that's all my my regret now is I never got to see Gwen solo, which I kind of did want to see Gwen solo, and I really want to see Gwen solo with No Doubt stuff, because sometimes when solo artists do their band stuff, they do it kind of in a different style or whatever. So I really wanted to see that, but well, I didn't. Anyways, I would definitely, I'm not going to fly to Coachella to go see him, but I would definitely go see him. Someone in the comment section said, how about a No Doubt Sublime tour? And I said, that's stupid. That would never, I would say that would never happen, because No Doubt is Sublime is big, and but No Doubt is even bigger. So why, like, that's, it's two large age bands. They would never do that. But then I'm like, no, that's totally wrong. The paradigm, if you will, has totally changed. You know, Green Day and Rancid go on tour together now. Green Day and Weezer. Like, now the thing is giant bands going on tour together, and the ticket is extremely expensive, you
Oh
see.
my God.
Like, when they used to package bands, it was so it was cheaper per band, but overall the tour made more money. Now, like, let's just say, like, No Doubt is $150 and Sublime is $60. So the ticket won't be
Okay.
$210. The ticket will be $300. Like that's how it works now, you know? So, but I actually would love to see that in. I would definitely go see that.
The No Doubt Sublime Tour. Who would you
Well,
have
and
opening?
who I have open? Well, that's a good question. I mean, realistically, well, if that were to happen, realistically, it would be a newer band or it would be the Interrupters. I would.
Oh,
Oh,
true.
here's the tour, Em. Here's the tour.
Okay, yes.
At the top, No Doubt. Then
Okay.
Sublime. Then your regional, you're somewhat big, but not that big band, Interrupters. Opener, Catbite, Em. That's who.
Ooh. That would be cool. That'd be a good
What?
show.
That'd be an amazing show. One band that you won't get to see on see live is Rage Against the Machine. Drummer Brad Wilk has basically said, "That's it, party's over, no more Rage Against the Machine." M, do you
Yep.
care? Is Rage meaningful to you? And is this Zach being wacky, or is it Zach and Tom fighting?
Oh, I think 100% it's Zach and Tom fighting, just pure baseless speculation. Because, like, and maybe other members of the band don't want to get involved, or maybe they've taken sides, or maybe they're just like, oh no, they're at it again kind of thing. I don't want to be stuck in the middle anymore. But I watched the Rock Hall like induction thing because they had it on TV, so you didn't have to like pay for it or whatever. So I watched that. And Tom Morello was the only one from the band who was there to accept the award and the place and the space and whatever. And after I read this, I thought back to his speech, and in his speech, he said, obviously I'm paraphrasing, but like, if you loved our band, that's great. We're done. Go start a new one. So I kind of wonder if it was before Brad announced it. He kind of let it slip a little bit, and then Brad was just like, okay, cool, I'm gonna talk about it now. But I definitely think that there's some pretty intense conflict within the band. Because like Zach skipped the ceremony to go to a pro-Palestinian rally. And I believe his like comment was, I don't want to go and be inducted into something when I can like affect change, you know, out. And I mean, I agree with that. I think that's great if you wanna, if you're, you know, again, a very political band and very outspoken, what's like, you know, kind of more punk and more like to your message than going to a rally and supporting a cause that you believe in rather than just going and like drinking champagne and hanging out, even though that is a pretty like cool thing to be inducted into the Rock Hall of Fame. Say what you will about it, like, you know, it's still pretty neat.
See, I'm going to jump in. I'm going to say that's actually passive aggressive posturing from Zach, because
Ooh.
where can Zach make more of a, where if he's going to a protest or a rally, the point is to get the word out, right?
Yeah.
So if he goes to the Rock Hall and says something about it, he's reaching way more people than he would be as one of the many other faces at the rally itself, you see. So to
Yeah.
me, that's Zach saying F you to Tom. And not really what he's saying it's for. I mean, he can go to rallies any day of the week. Does he have to go to one that one exact day? You know, so I think that's him being kind of cutesy woozy.
Interesting. Well, yeah, it was 'cause in interesting too, 'cause like in Tom's speech, he did, you know, kind of be like support your causes or whatever, but didn't name anything directly. So that's also kind of like, you know.
Well, Tom. Well, see that. I mean, there's also another dynamic there, and we don't want to get too into it because there's no way out. But Zach went to a pro-Palestinian rally, but
Yes.
Tom Morello is half Jewish, you see, and just because he's Jewish doesn't mean he stands on one side of thing or the other. But there is implications there, you know.
Interesting, interesting take.
So, you know, they're with bands, there's so many things behind the scenes that you don't even know about. So it could be any number of things. I think Zach and Tom don't get along, but I think the reason there's
Yeah.
no more Rage Against the Machine is because Zach is wacky. And I think Zach is wacky because he's like, I'm gonna do One Day Is a Line, and then he does like an EP, and that's the end of it. Then he's like, I'm gonna do a record with the Run the Jewels guy, or rather with LP producing and me rapping. They do one song and that falls apart, you know? I mean, Tom's done a ton of stuff since Rage Against the Machine. It's all been pretty bad. Street Sweeper was okay. It wasn't great. I mean, I love Boots. I like Boots way better than Zach and but Boots' voice just isn't suited for Tom Morello's guitar lines. But Tom's done lots of stuff. What has Zach done since Rage Against the Machine? Literally one EP and one track. That's all he's done in 20 some years. Are you there, Em?
Yep.
Oh. So I think it's Zach being wacky. Not that I really care, because I don't even really care about Rage Against the Machine. I mean, I remember when Rage Against the Machine came out, it was like the craziest thing I ever heard. I'm like, oh my God, I've never heard anything like this. And now I listen to it. I mean, it sounds cool, but it's not like the skull-shattering, mind-blowing thing that it was when they first came out. Maybe that's because there's been so many people that have followed in their wake. But it's not as shocking to me as it once was, you know, by any means,
Right.
honestly. So I don't know. That's the 90s, kids. You're not gonna see
Mm-hmm.
you can see No Doubt, you sort of can see Sublime, and you can't see Rage Against the Machine. Here's what you might not be seeing for much longer, though. Pitchfork is going to be folding into GQ. Condé Nast, the giant publisher, maybe one of the biggest publishers in the world, bought Pitchfork in 2015, and they are folding the publication into GQ.
Ew.
And they laid off a whole bunch of people, including editor-in-chief Pooja Patel and features editor Jill Maples. A lot of people had a lot of different takes on this and a lot of different mixed emotions. People actually kind of forgot that, well, I don't know if they forgot this or not, but for about 5 or 6 years, Pitchfork was the publication that literally had the power to make and break bands, and they did make and break bands. They definitely broke Dismemberment Plan. They famously gave them like a 0 or a 0.1, like meanly, and it pretty much ended the band. Now, I would say if you're a band where a review can end your band, well, that's almost more on you than the publication. But that being said, there was a significant factor as to the power of Pitchfork. But by contrast, Pitchfork pretty much made Odd Future. That was kind of the end of the Pitchfork at full power. Like when they were going, oh, Odd Future, the new Odd Future, Odd Future. They kind of made Odd Future as big as they were. After Condé Nast bought them out, they kind of lost. They actually changed quite a bit. They went from mostly covering indie rock to covering only hip hop. And then about 3 or 4 years ago, they kind of shifted into a melange without a real identity, if you will. I remember for a while, the joke was Pitchfork. Oh, you mean mainstreamhiphop.com, which was kind of funny. And of course, arguably Pitchfork is the publication that sort of threw Ceremony off the tracks, in the sense that Ceremony was the hardcore band, and they put out Zoo, which got a mediocre review from Pitchfork. And they put out L-Shaped Man, which got a vicious review from Pitchfork, and it didn't end the band, but it kind of killed a lot of momentum that they had. That maybe that would have happened anyways, but it really did make a lot of people second think and question Ceremony. And at the time, people thought the review was needlessly mean. Going
Right.
back, I actually think the review might be correct. But it is needlessly mean. Like the points could have been made without them being so insanely mean about the record and the participants in the record.
Right.
And so a lot of people, honestly, a lot of people in the punk community, the indie community, were cheering the destruction of Pitchfork, because Pitchfork was kind of a schoolyard bully for a long time, you know. But on
Yeah.
the other hand, some people were taking the moral high ground. Like, well, I never celebrate when someone loses their job. And also, the people losing their job now at Pitchfork aren't the people that were at Pitchfork when Pitchfork was the make it or break it publication. So it's a real mix of emotions and interesting viewpoints. And yet again, another publication is falling apart after being purchased by a powerful company, which is not unusual. So, Em, what's your take on this?
Well, I was not an avid Pitchfork reader. I just, I was not an avid Pitchfork reader, but I know that it's very, culturally significant. So I have read things on it. I think this is terrible. I might not agree with everything that they have done in the past, but I do know that in the past little while, they have been pushing for more bans that include women and non-binary people and really trying to expand what they cover. And that's something that's very, very important, especially from a music publication that people still look up to. And that's really great to see. So definitely give them props for what they've been able to do in the past couple years. I don't agree with reviews being mean just to be mean, but the pitchfork that is being folded into was not, is like you said, is not the pitchfork of 10 years ago or whatever. I think it's terrible that they're laying a lot of people off, especially because we've seen so many other media outlets, especially online music outlets, fold and have these people be turned out kind of immediately. It's incredibly hard to get paid for your writing. It's incredibly hard to it's something that everybody values, but nobody realizes how much they value it until it's gone. And I think that that's what we're in the danger zone, for right now. Things have value, people's words have value, and that should really be pushed before, again, the profits and everything else. What's especially glaring too is, again, all the work that they have put in with covering more a more diverse range of bands, and then they get absorbed by fucking GQ. You know what I mean? And I saw a statement that was circulated, I believe, through the staff, and it was like, oh yeah, well, nothing will really change. Both Pitchfork and GQ really provide hard-hitting music journalism. And it's like, what music journalism does GQ do? What music journalism? What do they do other than just here's a suit. Enjoy it. I have no idea, but I assume that's what it is. It's just frustrating. But again, it just kind of goes to show the importance of independent media and how you can't trust anything, and if something seems too good to be true, it is. If you're running a website or you're running a publication and you get acquired for a good amount of money, well, that's going to come back and bite you in the ass because they're never going to preserve the integrity of whatever the site is or whatever it does. This is happening to so many music publications. This is happening to so many journalistic output outlets and stuff, but it's also could potentially be happening with Bandcamp and stuff because they just were just acquired again. We don't know a lot about the company, and I was seeing things on Twitter not long after the Pitchfork acquisition or folding was announced. People were trying to get onto Bandcamp and were getting a 503 error code. So the site wasn't loading. It was like it just kind of didn't exist. And then it did come back online, so it is working. But that's also very scary where it's people have the power to erase all of this and just take everything down and take everything away and just make it whatever they want, like kind of the corporate cookie cutter kind of idea. So I don't think this is good. I don't think this is good at all. Yeah. Those are my thoughts.
Well, that's I don't know where I mean I'm bummed that any publication is closing up. One of the things that you can say about Pitchfork is that they definitely took the art of the review to its height and then beyond, in that like they really did make a review a almost academic treatise or an academic type pub, type document. But then of course they kind of succumbed to their own hoity-toityness, if you will, their own
Yeah.
what's the word I'm looking for? When something is too
Pretentiousness.
pretentious, also, I think the failure of late era Pitchfork is it was kind of aimless and it really didn't have any distinct voice. And one thing that always annoyed me about mid and late era Pitchfork was what's a hypocritical nature, in that it would attack like all these rock bands for their sexist, including Sublime for being sexist. Okay, fair shot, but then they would like laud hip hop, which was like guys like Trippie Redd, who'd be like, that bitch sucked my dick and I kick her out, blah blah. And it's like they're like Trippie Redd is entering into daring new territory. It's like no, he's not. He's talking about getting a
Total.
blowjob. You know what I mean? It's like so, like it was very uneven as to their perspectives. And Pitchfork was really mean, and people actually kind of at the very beginning of Pitchfork, they would actually review stuff like Asian Man Records and stuff and Hellcat, which was kind of interesting. But Pitchfork did do a good job of taking music journalism and criticism seriously, and they did a lot of good interviews, although sometimes they were a little too dry, a little too pretentious.
Yeah.
I think they made a lot of missteps journalism wise, but they did a lot as to the form. They did an excellent form. And actually, with regards to Punk News, the standard that I hold reviews to as to whether or not they're good reviews is, could this run on Pitchfork in 2010? Not as to pomposity, but as to level of
Thought.
competence and craft. And is this, Maximum Rock and Roll and Razor Cake, they're like, this sounds like Discharge, it's fast, buy it. It's like that's such a nothing review. And my angle for Punk News was always like, well, let's write about punk in the Pitchfork style without the pretentiousness. So you got to give Pitchfork credit for that. So it's sad that any publication is going. Well, I mean, it's not gone yet, but the writing's on the wall. I used to read Pitchfork every single day during the height of Pitchfork, 2007 or 2012. And then I read less and less and less and less and less and less as it kind of changed. And I think that maybe that's why it's down in the dumps now. So, well, I don't know. Read Punk News and keep us around.
Hell
Let's see. I think
yeah.
we got
We
one or two
actually
more
break
stories.
news, man.
We do break news.
Okay.
Actually, we'll just burn through this super quick. Kepi Ghouli says he's putting out four records this year, and he hasn't put out an album in like, well, actually, he put out two albums last year, but it was two covers album, a Ramones covers album, and just a covers album. He hasn't put out like a straight up album in like, let me look here. Well, like 5 or 6 years, I think. Lost and Loving It. The new Kepi Ghouli, are we going to get a for real deal Kepi Ghouli band record, or is he just going to put out more covers and more acoustic stuff and whatever? What are we going to get, Em?
I am hopeful that there will be an album, a full band album. So I'm going to say there will be. I also think there's going to be a couple acoustic things and probably a covers because four records is a lot of records and a lot of stuff to put out. But I do think one of them is going to be the full band. What do you think?
The last, well, actually, I need to. So the last actual Kepi album was 2016, which is 8 years ago.
Oh,
Since
wow.
then, he's put out at least two records where he's re-recorded Groovy Ghoulies albums, which confounds me because he owns those albums. I don't know why he's re-recording albums that he owns. You know what I mean? He's put
For
out an
fun?
acoustic, but then. My question, well, then do it live and make it like different somehow. You know what I mean? But
Yeah.
he's like I asked him about it once and he couldn't give me a straight answer. I have no idea why he would spend all that time and money to do that. I mean, one of them was recorded. No, actually, both of them were recorded. One was Kepi in the Copyrights and one was Kepi in the Accelerators. Those both follow tours that he did with those bands. So then why not just record the tour set as a studio album, you know, so we get to hear what it was like with that band. Why re-record an entire album in order that you already own? It's confounding. He did an acoustic album with Vic Ruggiero of the Slackers, and then he did those two covers albums. I think we're not going to get full records from Kepi. I think we'll get one to two if we're lucky. If we're real lucky, I think one's going to be a full up Kepi album, and the other's going to be like him doing acoustic versions of his old songs that he's already done. But that being said, any Kepi that I can get, I'll take. He's very frustrating in that I'm a massive Kepi fan. I actually think his solo stuff is his best stuff ever. But like Kepi Ghoulie and Groovy Ghoulies, it's not dangerous, but it's just so good. It's written so good. It rocks. It sounds great. It's so good to see live. He's so frustrating in that it's like, Kepi, just give us another Kepi album, and he won't do it. He's like, here's an acoustic album. Here's a covers album. Here's me reworking a bunch of old songs. Like, no, Kepi, just give us an album. So he's just one of these guys that I don't know if it's because it's just easy to crank out, you know, simple albums, or if he has some sort of trepidation that he fears he might not be able to live up to his past excellence. I think he can. We'll see. Last story of the day. The new Hellcat single. There's a new Hellcat Records Club single. The band is called like the Clamatos or something. No, hold on a second here.
Clamatrix. Clamatrix.
The band is the Calamatics.
Oh, there we go.
I like Calamatrix though.
Yeah.
Tim loves TIX instead of CKS. Bad optics. Calamatics. I think it's as in calamity, but it's calamatix. Something.
Maybe.
There's a few things to take from this. First of all, I thought we were getting a Doom Regulator record or something. Also, how about Cecile? What was Cecile's band's name? I forget. They only put out one song. How about Bonk Bonk? Tim, you were going on about how great you think Bonk Bonk is. And now you're like, he's like, Calamatix. I've been working on this a long time, and there's more to come. I'll kick it off first. It's very much a throwback Hellcat Records 90s retro ska song. I like it. I think it's pretty good. I don't think it's amazing, but I think it's real good, and I think it's a pretty good throwback retro ska song. I certainly would listen to more of this. But yet again, Tim comes across a thing that we've mentioned time and time again. He just won't stick to one thing. Like, it seems like he's almost, what do you call when someone, like, ADD or something? Like, I'm going to do this band. I'm going to do that band. I'm going to do this band. And he always, like, and there's a whole lot more going to come. And it never comes. It's always just, like, one track, and we never hear from it ever again, you know?
Right. Do you think this is just kind of a one and done?
I think we're never going to hear from this band ever again, even though he says you're definitely going to hear from this band again. What do you think of it? What do you think of the song, Em?
Yeah, like just based off of the name, I had no idea what to expect with it, but it's pretty good. It's nice. Like it's a really cute song with the lyrics and very like, again, has a more relaxed vibe and. I didn't mind it at all. I thought it was pretty good. I agree. It's really hard to trust more is coming. I do kind of have the feeling that there will be more like Doom Regulator and more of this band and maybe more of Bonk Bonk, but probably not. But I think there might be more of those two bands. But I think more music is going to be later rather than sooner. I think it's going to take a really long time. And then right when we're like, hey, do you remember Doom Regulator? What did they do? Or the Calamatix? Hey, what did they do? You know? And then it's like, surprise, we're releasing something when everyone's kind of like,
You know, I just had a thought. Is I hope this is not the case in that like Tim's like, yeah, Doom Regulator, we're going to do Doom Regulator, yeah, and like Jesse's like waiting, like doesn't do other things because he's waiting for Doom Regulator. Like, right. I hope Doom Regulator doesn't get in the way of Classics of Love or whatever the sequel to Classics of Love is. That'd be a real bummer, wouldn't it?
It would be. I hope it doesn't.
Yeah, well, I just wish they would let Jesse know, like, we're doing it or we're not doing it. I want to do calimathics now, you know. One thing that I wanted to add is
Yes.
bullshit detector is the wrong word, but I guess there's something more to this detector went off because Tim just posted, here's the calimathics, bada bing, bada boom. And I saw the calimathics already had 20,000 followers or 60,000 followers, even though
Oh
they
my
only
gosh.
they're like brand new. I'm like, there's something more here. So I Googled calimathics, and then the only thing that came up was the Instagram for Raelynn Joy. And she's the
Right.
singer of calimathics. So then I said, well, who's this person, Raelynn Joy? So I put her into Discogs, and it turned out that she's done some pop singles, 2016 and 2017, about 10 of them.
Oh,
And then
wow.
I looked at her Instagram, and she's got like 300,000 followers on Instagram. I'm like, so who's this person? So I did some more Googling. And I did not met, so I mentioned that in the story because I thought, well, yeah, she's been in some other bands. Let's let the people know who she is, you know?
Definitely.
Do you know who she was before she was a pop singer?
I do not.
She's actually like a semi-famous porn star. I didn't even know this, you see.
I did
And
not know this.
so
Good for her.
I didn't put it in the article, but should I have put it in the article? That's the question. Because on one hand, it lets us know who this person is. It's the background. But you can say, well, porn's got nothing to do with music. But on the other hand, we live in a sex positive world now, and we're pro sex workers. So why
Hell
shouldn't we
yeah.
mention that she's been porn? You know? So I don't know. I didn't put it in because I think, well, I'll play it safe this time. But is that relevant, Em, that she used to be a well-known porn star?
I
Or
think
is
it's
well, she is she doesn't do porn. She's still well known for doing porno, but I believe she does not do porn anymore.
an interesting fact, but I don't think it needs to be in the story just because there's no,
Why
like,
not?
if, well, like, she's not currently, doing porn. If she was, then I think, yeah, that's definitely something that you could put in.
But what if she was a brain surgeon? Wouldn't we put that in? I think we would, to tell you the truth. Like
Yeah,
it
we
like
would. If
you
it's like
know,
you're an
so
active brain surgeon, then yeah, that's going in.
but what if she was a brain surgeon that like she's not a brain surgeon anymore, but she like solved some sort of brain ailment? Like wouldn't we put that in? I think we would.
Well, yeah, like we put like known for her work detecting this
Right, and she's known for
synapse or
porno. Like
whatever.
that's why she's well known on Instagram because she, you know. So should we put that in? I'm not actually arguing that. I'm just playing devil's advocate here because I really don't know the answer. You know what I mean?
I would say, if
Because
it's not.
and I'll say is you might say, well, don't put in the fact that she's porno because you're trying to demean her or cast aspersion on her. But if we're sex positive and we're pro sex worker porn, then why wouldn't we put that in? You see what I'm saying?
Well, I think it depends on how she defines herself. Like, I think if like you go to
Hmm.
her Instagram bio and like it's a like she's described herself as like a former porn star or like something along those lines, then I think yeah, that's totally fine to put in. But if it's not in her bio and she's not describing herself that way currently, then I don't think you should put it in.
So
Just because
does that mean so Amy of the Interrupters used to be and still might be into all that like anti-vax stuff. Should we not put that in because she doesn't identify as that anymore?
I think if somebody has, well, that's a little bit different. Like that's hard to.
Why is that different? And I'm not beating you up. I'm just kind
I
of
know.
walking, you know, you and I are
Just
walking through this intellectual journey, which
yes, of
I don't even think
course.
actually has an answer. But let's walk through to see where we go. You know what I mean?
Well, 'cause like being a porn star or being a sex worker, like that's your job. Like that's your choice. That's your work, and that's what you hopefully love to do, and that's awesome and all well and good. But if you're like, man, you know what? I'm gonna spew some lies and some hatred and, like disperse information that gets people killed, then it's like, nope, I can't trust you. You know what I mean? Like, that is completely different because that's not your profession. That's something that you believe, and that's something that is actively doing harm to people. Being a porn star is not actively doing harm to anybody.
So what if someone used to be a famous or what if someone was really big in the pro-Palestinian stuff? Like that was like their job or whatever. Like Butch Riley used to be a community organizer, and people mention that
Oh
in, you know, so should you mention that?
yeah. Like community organizing, I
No, no,
think.
not community. I'm saying, like, let's say someone is was big in pro pal, you know, free Palestine, like they were like one of the top dogs in some organization. Should we mention
Sure.
that? How about if someone is very pro Zionism? Should we mention that? You see,
It's hard
the
because,
point I'm
sorry.
making is with Amy, like let's say, and I don't even know how Amy feels anymore because she doesn't talk about it. But
Right.
if we say that, and if Amy talked about it, it'd be a lot easier, you know. If she was, I was 18, and you know that was not cool, then everyone would say fine, you know. You know, well, not everyone, actually, not everyone, especially in punk, but still, you get what I'm saying.
Right, right.
But by saying that we should talk about Amy's past, but because that's quote bad, and I think anti-vaxxing is bad. I'm not trying to make that issue. But
Right.
we shouldn't talk about Raylan Joyce because she was a porn star, but she doesn't want to be a porn star now, and that's good or neutral. That makes us, you and M, you and I, that makes us the morality police, you see.
Well, I don't think it does because being a porn star is a profession. It's something that you do. Holding beliefs that hurt people, that's not your profession. That's who you are.
So then, if someone is, say, like very pro-Zionism, do you feel that hurts someone? And you don't have to answer that question. What I'm saying is it gets very gray very quickly as to whether or not something does or does not hurt people. You know what I mean? Like, let's say someone is a union organizer. You say, well, that's good. But let's say someone's a union organizer, but they were a corrupt union organizer, you know? Or let's say someone is a union buster, but they bust up corrupt unions, you know? It all gets very cloudy very quick, you know, and I think there's not an answer. I don't think there is an answer as to whether or not we should talk about whether. I actually think I lean towards that we should mention that she's a porn star, not to demean her, just because it's an interesting fact. You know what I mean? Like let's say she used to be a long haul truck driver. I think we would mention that too because that's an interesting fact, you know.
Right.
But I didn't mention it to err on the side of caution. You know what I mean? Because on the other hand, it is just for fun. And I don't know if she wants to be known as a porn star. I'm looking at her Instagram right now. It doesn't mention porn at all. Well,
Well, yeah.
there are some racy pictures in here. And so let's say she didn't want to be porn anymore and she had a real bad time in porn. Then I didn't want to be like the person say, she used to be in porno. Go get her. I didn't want to be that
Yeah,
person. You know what I
exactly.
mean?
No, a hundred
But
percent.
maybe she's glad that she used to do porno. I don't know. You know what I mean?
I think there's no way to know unless you talk to somebody. Because, like, on Wikipedia, it says, like, she retired from adult film acting in 2016 to pursue other interests such as songwriting and mainstream acting. So I think it's like, from that, it sounds like the adult film industry is firmly in the past, and now she's focusing on pursuits that are not involved with the adult film industry. So she'd like to be known kind of as that.
But on the other hand, M, is we, you and I think both agree that we are not controlled by what the subject wants us to report on, you see. You know what I mean?
Oh,
Like
no, for sure.
if someone's accused of domestic abuse, we're not going to not report that because they don't want us to. You know what I
Well,
mean?
yeah, that you need to report on that.
Right. So like let's say she doesn't want us to report on her porn history. That doesn't mean we shouldn't, you know. But on the other hand, is the fact of the matter is it's just music. It's actually not that important. So I don't want to destroy someone's life over, you know, that. You know what I mean? Not that that would.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, it's public. But on the other hand, it is public info that. I mean, I'm looking. I actually didn't. Like, I'm looking at her Wikipedia right now. Like, it mostly talks about her porn. You know what I mean?
Well, because her Wikipedia page is under the name that she did porn under, like by her stage name.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's a tough, tough call. Definitely tough call.
I don't think for, I think it depends if it's relevant to the story. Like, this is an interesting fact that she used to be a porn star. But I don't think it's relevant to like the band releasing a song.
But we talk about things that aren't relevant all the time, I think. Well, not all the time.
It give me an
And,
example.
well, good point. I mean, I know I do, but maybe like I'll just put in like fun factoids that no one gives a shit about. You know what I mean? Like I'm trying to like let me look here. And we'll wrap this on up. But let's see here. People usually get angry when I do that. Well,
The fun facts.
my computer's free. Here we go. Let's see here. Oh, I could be just freeze. Anyways, we're talking about offspring sometimes. It's got nothing to do with offspring, you know?
Right. What was it about offspring?
Dexter Holland makes hot sauce. So sometimes in offspring
Oh, yeah.
articles, we'll mention his hot sauce just to be wacky because he sells hot sauce. You know? That's got nothing to do with offspring at all, you know?
Is it Offspring brand hot sauce, or is it just
No,
Dexter's hot sauce?
Gringo Bandito, which has his like the likeness of him on the cover or the label rather.
Ah, got
Pretty good hot sauce actually. Years
you.
ago we did a taste test article at Punk News where we had like Marky Ramone's pasta sauce, we had Dexter's hot sauce, we had Iron Maiden beer and some other stuff, and I gotta say
Ooh.
Dexter's hot sauce was pretty good.
That would be cool. We should bring that back. I'm trying to think of
Well,
like who has like cool stuff.
I think the food craze is over. Like for a hot minute, everyone was making foods, you know. Marky Ramone's pasta sauce was actually like really expensive, honestly. It was like $12.
Oh, geez. What was it good? Like, was it worth it or was it like,
Nah,
ugh?
nah.
Nah.
Well,
Not
see, I
worth
thought
it.
Marky was Italian, but I learned he wasn't Italian, so he has no credit whatsoever to make pasta sauce. Get out of
How
here.
dare he?
Exactly.
Then why did he make
Anyways.
pasta sauce?
Cause, well, honestly, like he took a lot of flack for it, but I actually was in his corner on that one. I'm like, if Marky wants to make a pasta sauce, why can't? I mean, any like if M came out with a pasta sauce, no one would be like, M can't make a pasta sauce, so why can't
True.
Marky also make a pasta sauce? But on the other hand, it like, wasn't that good, you know? And also, Marky's
Yeah.
kind of a dick. So, anyways, tough questions, no answers.
Yep.
Listeners, you tell us if we should report on what's your name, Ray Joy or something, her porno past in these articles.
Raylan Joy.
Should we post clips to her videos? Do you want to see that at punknews.org? Should
Oh my
punknews.org
God.
just become a full-on porno website? Should we just forget about punk whatsoever and just run porno all the time? M, should we just run porno all the time at Punk News?
That'd be a great April Fool's thing.
Well, there you have it. Or should we run porno of Marky Ramone? Should we convince
Oh,
Marky Ramone to do a
no.
porno and then we'll run that at Punk News?
No.
One last thing I want to mention, and
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be Mr. White Knight at all, but it's like with Gwen, like one of the things that someone posted was like, you know, No Doubt used to be great, but then Gwen became a diva and got tons of plastic surgery. What a bitch!
Oh.
Like that was one of the commenters. It's like
Yeah.
no one talks about how the social distortion guy looks like the Crypt Keeper. You know what I mean? Like just because she's a woman, you're commenting on how she looks. You never comment on how men look on this website ever. That's bullshit. And
No.
also, Gwen still looks pretty and hot, so you're wrong. But like, I was mad that it's like, and people were like, click liking it. It's like, man, it's like I thought we were beyond that, honestly. You know what I mean? And we're not. We're not. That sucks.
We're not as terrible. I think the worst that anybody's ever got, like a male figure has ever gotten on Punk News, is this guy looks bloated.
On a side note, and not to drag this out, on a related note,
Yes.
there was that video, and I realize I'm rambling, but there was that video of Green Day in the subway. And did you see that?
I saw it, but I haven't watched it. Like, I
Yeah.
know it
Well, okay.
exists, but I haven't
Yeah.
watched it.
Okay. I gotta say, man, you gotta give Billy Joe credit. The dude still looks like he's about 28. Like I can't. He's like
Yeah.
60. He looks like he's 28. He's gotta be a vampire. Like what is going on, M? He still looks exactly like he did in 1995.
I think it's the he is a good person, so his skin is good thing. Like I read a some it was somebody making a joke where it's if you're a decent person, you're going to have good skin and you're never going to age. And I think that's what goes on with him. 'Cause And like the other two members of Green Day too, like Trey Cool and Mike Dirnt, like I think they're just good people and that kind of just shines through. But yeah, like,
So what does that say for Iggy?
well, I don't think it's this case in all cases. I think he needed sunscreen and he didn't use it.
I actually think though for like a 75-year-old man, Iggy's holding up pretty good, honestly. Like most 75-year-old men do not look that good with their shirt off. But also, how about Danzig? The dude is
That's true.
literally—he's like 68. The dude still looks pretty rad. He still looks like friggin' Danzig, you know? So I don't know. So does that mean
Yeah.
Danzig's a good guy? Em, are you admitting that
Maybe.
Danzig's a good dude?
Maybe. Yes.
Or maybe it's
Perhaps.
all those free autographs bought him some good skincare routine. Anyways, so yeah, so let's wrap this all up. You can reach that podcast at punknews.org. And any last comments you want the listeners to know about this extended episode or anything in general?
Support independent media. Send us $5.
Send us $5. We do accept PayPal and Venmo. Podcast at Punk News. We will see you when then? When will we see them?
Next week.